Come and gather up your links. All the things you thought were red. Couple things you thought stink. And you sort them all out. Like paper slips in your lap. It's time to lay it down. It's time to record another metaphor podcast.
Well, and I don't know. I don't know if you've been keeping up on like other internet things, but the Learned League, right after you joined, had a catastrophic failure.
I saw something about it being down, but I didn't catch up on what happened at all.
Well, I just caught up this morning and I didn't even see it was down, but basically some kind of catastrophic failure at the host who also didn't have backups.
At all?
No.
So basically
there's a local backup that Shane is using, Shane's Thorsten Integrity. And there's
not a real name?
Yeah. But his real name is Shane Bushfeld. Like he's not like a weird creep about like never use my name.
Yeah,
like,
no,
he's a real human being. And you know, like you're Josh Millard and you're not like,
no, I just think Thorsten Integrity is a funny pseudonym. I enjoyed getting email.
Yeah, well, and he takes it seriously. Like it's a complete alter ego kind of. But so he has a local backup, but there's some stuff they just don't have, which like it's 2018. Like, I don't know who his host is, but I would be firing them, you know, or like, you know, shining their name across the, I mean, because they've got 20,000 users or 10,000 users or something crazy. So the good news is that everybody's going to get a new flag if they want one. Which, to be honest, I kind of feel like I brought this on myself because I've been bitching about my flag basically nonstop since I realized I could never change it. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff in the forums that's just going to be gone. Like a lot of people's stats. I think the stats are pretty well backed up because other people have backups of it. But it's just, I can't even imagine,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So you guys, with your relatively short downtime, I think basically are good. And tell me if I have this correct. Was Frimble out of town?
Frimble was out of the country, in fact.
Because I saw a picture of Frimble in Canada.
Yeah, they're in Canada visiting family, I think, which maybe – so Frimble, by my understanding, when I hired them anyway, is a Canadian living in Austria.
Oh, okay. And, I never knew. All right.
Yeah. Has a German partner, family in Canada that I think originates in Michigan. So there was a whole complicated Canada and the Midwest line of sort of discussion about like culture shock stuff for
Frimble's
partner,
okay.
Kata, who is, you know, experiencing Canada, I don't know for the first time necessarily, but like, you know, is used to living in, you know, Germany or Austria. And like the expense and the spread outness and lack of good transit stuff has all been like a point of like, what the hell? Whereas
right,
Frimble's
you just can't
got experience
get there?
With this. Yeah. So Frimble kind of like has experience with that and is instead just like more like, oh, it some of the cultural feel is different now that I'm back in Canada. But there's been fun running chatter in the MFI mod Slack about sort of the various cultural adjustments of like suddenly being in Canada instead of Austria.
Well, and I saw a picture of Frimble with Flex. I'm not sure what her username is, something about mice or rats or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I have never seen a picture of Frimble before. How nifty.
Yep. They really do exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually that worked out timing-wise because it meant they were up to actually work on the the outage. I suppose
the
we
troubles.
Could like – We haven't said anything problematic in this whole like last 5 minutes, and it's topical. So instead of repeating ourselves, we'll just call this a really long cold open. I don't know.
Hey.
That'd be a really long cold open.
Welcome. Yeah, that's fine.
But this is episode 140. 140. This is a very important episode because it's an episode for every character in a tweet back before they changed how many characters could be in a tweet.
That was going to be my bit.
Was it?
Josh.
Wow. That's great. We've got we had similar instincts. Do you want to do your version?
No. you know, 140, whatever, the number stuff is getting tiresome, but it was like the 140 characters. Job died at 140, which is something Wikipedia sees fit to tell me, which I think is just bizarre. And it's also the number of different kinds of pipe, cigar, and tobacco ashes that Sherlock Holmes apparently could identify or knew or understood.
I'm relieved that that's where that went, because if someone's on Wikipedia said this is how many types there are, there's no way that you can be firm on that. Kind of like, come on,
right. Shut up, nerds.
But no, Sherlock Holmes said so. It's an acceptable level of okay. Well, that's a number you can say that is what that one fictional character said.
Well, and like the same thing with Job, right? Like it's the age that the Bible says Job died at is different than like Job was this old, and you're like, no, yeah. I mean.
Well, and then there's also like, you know, the Bible doesn't really say, but we decided to apply our own calendrical metric to it. And we've determined that, which is like, you know, the sort of the spirit of the, this is exactly how old the young earth is. It started on a Tuesday, you know.
Right. We made a choice.
Whereas if the Bible actually says, and then, you know, at age 140, he shuffled off this mortal coil and began.
Well, and that's one of the reasons I'm actually bad at trivia is because I don't know much about the Bible and cannot be bothered to learn. I don't know why. Like, it's a weird sticky thing with me, you know? Like, there's Bible stuff and Shakespeare stuff, and both of those I just can't do it for some weird
reason. I mean, it's – I feel like how much do I want to dive into like a literary analysis and cultural analysis of holy books? But I would put it this way. I would say, you know, as much as a huge cultural influence as it has turned out to be, and as much as it has some interesting, complicated literary things going on with it, if the Bible was not attached to a hugely successful, you know, 2,000-year-old religion, I don't think it would be high on a lot of book lists. Just because the things, it's a wandering mess. The language is archaic, contradicts itself. It can't even like, you can't find a narrative through line without like doing backflips. It's all very, it's rough reading, you know?
Yes.
So well, getting like excited just for the hell of it about like getting super familiar with the details of the Bible seems like, yeah, no.
Shakespeare is a problem too. Like they, I did this wedding that was a, you know, kind of a bookish wedding. It was at Boston Public Library, and they had the wedding cake was made of books. Right. And I didn't know the couple that well. So I, you know, riffed a little bit off of the books that were in the wedding cake because it was a nerd wedding. And so great. So it's like The Princess Bride. So I didn't do like the marriage thing because, ugh. But, you know, talking about, yes, there's going to be kissing and whatever. There was Lord of the Rings. I don't really know anything about Lord of the Rings, surprisingly, even though I've seen the movies. But the other thing was like A Midsummer Night's Dream, which, of course, they misspelled on the wedding cake, which I'm just going to die, right? I'm going to die. But I actually don't really know that much about Midsummer Night's Dream, except that I've seen the play and I remember liking it. So then I like went back and like control F'd for love. And again, because it's a nerd wedding, I could just say that I did that and then talk about, you know, the things Shakespeare says about love. And I thought it was good. But I was like, man, how did I get here at like this age just being like, I don't really know what that has to do with love, but I guess I'll figure it out. You know, Tale of Two Cities, never read it. All these books, no idea. So, yeah.
I don't know much about Shakespeare. And I don't know much about Midsummer Night's Dream, but I do know enough to know that it's a good pick if you want to just make an easy sort of like adolescent joke because of the character named Bottom. So you can always like, get right there.
Right. Yeah, well, and like, you know, you don't know that much about it, but you know that Midsummer doesn't have a fucking hyphen, right?
I would not spell it with a hyphen, but I can't say definitively that there might not be a drift in usage. Like mid-hyphen summer is an understandable construction, even though I like it's not the title of the play, so yeah.
Yeah, I would never say this out loud to the couple or in any other way, but I was horrified because I am an actual nerd and I know how it's actually spelled.
Thankfully, we're not posting this recording publicly somewhere to be consumed by anyone who comes across it.
I've made sort of no linkability with, you know, this actual event despite telling a couple people about
I think a mistakenly inserted hyphen is probably like the best possible case for like a style or usage or spelling error, though. Like it's not like someone spelled summer with one M, like unless that was a really complicated joke about Sumeria itself. But, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. That's an acceptable level of variance in my mind. Like, worth fetching out, but at the same time, not
if
like,
if it had been my wedding, I would have died.
Well, sure. But, like, you probably would have, you know, I don't know. Maybe
over-controlled it from the beginning. Exactly.
And this was, like, writerly people, right? So, you know, maybe it was a collective, like, editorial in-joke. Maybe, like, intentionally inserting a small but conspicuous copy editing error into something as simple as cake text.
I actually prefer the "there's a joke everyone was in on except for me" version of that.
let's just run with that. We've solved it. We've solved the mystery. Aww. We've freed up time Sherlock can spend instead classifying tobacco.
Aww.
It's good work all around. We've done it.
Nice work. Now I feel better. Thank you. I'm not even going to talk about that, like, one space after periods, although maybe there's a Metafilter thread about it.
I just saw a thread about that this morning because someone flagged some comment in it, and the comment was fine. But awesome. I was like, oh, I don't have time before the podcast. I don't have time before the podcast to dig in on this because that you should put two spaces. Anyway.
What? Wait, what? Are you a two-space guy?
I believe in the semantic content of the second space, which is –
Just
a thin argument,
Josh,
at this point, but it's not nothing.
Do you double space after periods?
I do, yeah. You just never see it because we only communicate on the web. And you know.
And we don't talk in sentences ever.
Yeah.
Well, but I see you type stuff into Metafilter, and I guess I never noticed.
You wouldn't notice on Metafilter.
How would I notice?
You would not notice because by standard practice, possibly by definition in like whatever WC3 documentation, but certainly in practice for as long as I've ever noticed, web browsers have collapsed consecutive
unmarked
spaces into
unless
single
you NDSPE
spaces.
It.
Yeah. So unless you force the white space, it's going to take as many spaces as you want and collapse it down to one. So functionally, I can be both triumphantly righteous about my style preferences and
not
everybody else who thinks
crazy.
That's a problem gets their way. And that's the important thing. The people who – apparently I am just going to do this. The people who are upset about two spaces are basically being sore winners because they are getting their way in basically
every – On the internet, Josh,
there's
actually other places to read. You know?
Well, sure. But like where are most of these arguments happening?
Right.
So – in the common setting in which someone could complain about people putting two spaces, they never even see the two spaces unless someone goes to extraordinary effort, at which point it's just a pedantic nerd fight, you know, beyond common usage. And so like they are getting their way in terms of the presentation. I'm getting my way in terms of having my
spaces
preserved.
Getting to type the way you want and not have to learn new typing.
We've all actually come to a nice, happy place for internet venues anyway. And if I want to parse writing to distinguish between period terminated abbreviations like doctor and, you know, Mr. and Ms. and whatnot, and actual sentence terminal punctuation, you know, boom, which is a very narrow issue and there's ways to work around it. But I like it. I like that that's there and I wish everybody did it because they're wrong if they don't. So, yes. Metafilter. I guess we were talking about Metafilter sort of insofar as I was ranting angrily about a thread I haven't read.
Well, I mean, as one does.
Yes, one certainly does. Let's see. I guess we could talk about stuff.
So did you want to just dive right in?
Yeah, why don't we do it? Why don't we leap on in there?
I didn't look at jobs. I can tell you that right now.
Okay. Well, let's real time it. What's going on jobs? I know there were some jobs. I think only one is still open.
Yeah, because our last podcast, do we even talk about when the last podcast was? The last podcast was the joke show on the 3rd, which I thought went well, actually. I hope you liked it.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Thought it was a good time.
And so, you know, theoretically, if there was something perfect for March that we wanted to mention, we could.
Yep.
But otherwise, you know, all of April. And jobs was not super busy.
Yep, but there's a few things. There's security engineering, newsroom support engineer. I suppose I could, like, pace these in so they show up in the thing.
Yeah, we have a thing.
Yeah. I feel like we're firing on all all chambers, cylinders?
Cylinders. It's the freaking weekend, to be honest. I mean, the whole thing, like, the month kind of snuck up on me. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was, like, doing a wedding, you know, and so I was totally like, no, I can't. And then yesterday I was coming back from the wedding, and so we're doing it on a Sunday morning afternoon, which is not our normal.
Yeah, I don't know the last time we did a Sunday. But hey, whatever. You know, let's let our hair down. My hair's long enough to be down meaningfully at this point. So
mine is down because I sleep with it down, and I'm not actually out of my pajamas yet.
Yeah.
So perfect.
Well, hey, there's some stuff on projects. There's a really nice post from Aspen KF actually. So Dan F passed away a couple years ago.
I remember. I remember Dan F.
And his daughter. Got a hold of us and ended up signing up for Metafilter and talking about Dan a bit in the MetaTalk Obit thread. And she's posted a site collecting a bunch of his music recordings, basically put together an online catalog and archive, which is super rad.
I remember when she was, when she came around originally.
Yeah. So that's really nice. And it's a really, really nice sort of archive and testament to Dan. And
He was really active on MetaChat as well as MetaFilter, which I think actually maybe where I sort of got to know him. But yes, liked him. He played guitar. He was a nice dude. We answered some questions for him.
Yep.
Speaking of music, Miski Park? We've talked about how to pronounce this user's name before.
Yep.
Mike Sy Park? Clicking through to his Mike. That guy, Mike. Mike, who does music stuff, has a podcast for KCRW, and it's all about like music stories, more information about music stories. It's 8 episodes and just like weird stories about stuff. And one of them is about Louie Louie, and one of them is about pirate radio station WBAD. So if you're somebody who kind of likes that stuff, if you want to know where the shags are now, if you want to know about the McDonald's flexi disc that no one can find, you would probably really enjoy this podcast.
Nice. Well, speaking of podcasts, there's a new podcast from Superfluous M and Griffiths called The Microphone Never Blinks.
I saw a picture of Griffiths on Instagram talking into a microphone, and I was like,
I keep up on
Griffiths like completely erratically. Like we hang out if I'm in New York, and yet a lot of the rest of the time I just see his pictures on Instagram. But occasionally we'll like email about stuff. And I had been meaning to be like, Griffiths, why are you talking into a microphone? So thanks.
Because of news radio, because of classic sitcom news radio. So
wait, what?
News radio?
No, but oh, they're discussing the sitcom news radio. All right.
This is the subject That's so cool. of the podcast. Yes.
Griffiths, elder statesman. That's so adorable. But it was a very, like, sort of spotty projects month. Not spotty in the content or the quality, but just there wasn't a lot in April.
Everybody's doing their taxes.
Can I just talk about taxes briefly?
Yes, please.
I did 6 goddamn taxes this year. Or, like, between me and my sister, we did 6 taxes.
That's a lot of taxes.
It was one or two too many taxes.
How are we counting a tax here? Like, you did...
So I did my tax.
Okay.
I did malt shop's tax.
Okay.
I did my deceased mother's tax. We did the estate's tax. My sister did her tax. And then there was one more tax that I can't remember. But it was just a lot of taxes. And, you know, I did none of them really. Like, you know, I sort of managed people doing taxes. But, you know, checks were written over and over again. And, God, what was the other tax? At any rate, I was just so damn happy when they were all finished and everybody was paid and the government was paid. And you may have been following the fact that, like, basically every February, Vermont decides to audit me for no damn reason because of the weird way my sister and I have structured some of the stuff we own together.
Yeah.
Vermont's like, you owe more money. And I'm like, no. My sister owns that half and she pays Massachusetts. Vermont's like, prove it. And I was like, no, I proved it last year. They're like, we are an inexorable, immovable machine. Prove it again. And last year, I think I finally got through to them because this year in February, I received no audit.
Yay.
Yeah, it is a happy, I mean, it's hard to pay taxes under Trump because I hate him. But, like, there are still social programs that receive my money that help things that he hasn't managed to dismantle. And especially in Vermont. Like, taxes go to all sorts of good things. But I resent the additional paperwork.
Yep.
So, I wish I could remember the sixth tax. All right.
I feel like the Metafilter and then personal tax stuff all went successfully.
Congratulations.
Thanks basically entirely to my CPA.
Good. If you've got a good CPA, my guy, seriously, I'm going to have to move to another country with no taxes if something ever happens to my guy.
But yeah,
he's inexpensive. He has email. He's mellow. So when I'm like, I'm getting audited, he's like, well, that sucks. Let's figure that out. Instead of being like, oh my God, if I don't have the receipt for that hamburger you ate last year. Rah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no. It's basically same with mine. He's very chill and friendly and emails well and whatnot. So,
well, and here's a question about your taxes, right? Because you've got, I mean, it's not an expensive hobby, but it's definitely a hobby that costs more than like building moss terrariums. Like, because that's kind of, I guess, a potential like business slash hobby. Like, is that stuff tax write-off?
It would take some extra work to really make it work as business expenses and whatnot. So I'm sort of like, I talked about that with my guy.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, okay, so this is how we make the difference between basically hobbyist stuff and like a more legit business structure where expenses
aren't
tricky.
Right, that you're
tricky.
A working artist. Kind of
and basically, I'm just going to need to spend more time and effort on it before I'm going to care enough for it to be worth the effort.
I get it.
So, you know, we'll see. Maybe one day. But for now, no, I just that is something I do in my spare time.
Well, and you got a home office, right?
Yeah.
I got a home office. I like home office.
Anyway, taxes. They're over.
Moving
and now,
on. They have nothing to do with
Metafilter. Let's stop talking about them. We got past them. And yeah.
Because we didn't really get to talk last month.
Yeah, I know.
I
feel like we
jokes.
Should just like, let's talk about like, let's just talk. Let's just talk.
We signed you up for Learned League. They had a catastrophic data failure. There was that.
So I guess I'm going to have to upload my flag again is basically what it
is. Your flag
to.
Looks amazing, by the way.
Well, thank you. It really was 50% of the motivation. I was like, hey, I gotta have a rad flag. Okay. Like rad that got flag. Me on board.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm excited for that to start. I'm excited to see Mephites. There's a whole friend thing. I wanted to ask you about this. This is now the Learned League beginner podcast.
Because I was on the podcast with Matt talking about Learned League too, and that was actually a thing that happened last month.
Yeah. Did we talk
about
guess that was since the last there was a Meta Talk thread about that. I'll find that. I think we're just going to freeform this one. I think we're going to be jumping all over the place is how I'm feeling. But yeah, you were on a podcast. Matt
Has a new podcast.
a person named Matt Howie on the internet. He has a new podcast where he's talking to people about their hobbies and such. And he interviewed you about your Learned League stuff.
Yeah, he wanted to interview me about like kind of my civic stuff, you know, because I am an elected representative. I'm active in my town, really. And I honestly think he kind of couldn't find a hook, you know? Which, fine. Like, I get it. Like, you're kind of either super into civics or you're kind of not, really.
Yeah.
And so instead, he was like, well, let's talk about Learned League. And I was like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, you know I'm on Learned League. I was like, God damn it, Matt. Really? And has been for a year. But he got signed up by like somebody at work who did a terrible job of telling him how it all works and what's cool about it and how you link up with people there and the forums. And so we had a great rambling talk about, you know, what it's like and why I like it and the fact that, you know, I was joining you there. I mean, the podcast is really good in general. Like I've listened to some other episodes of it and, you know, no surprise, Matt does a great job. But it was really fun to sort of talk to him about something that basically had nothing to do with Metafilter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's such an odd thing. Like we between like the three of us and other folks involved in Metafilter have this long sort of working and collegial and friendly, you know, overlapping of interactions tied up in all this time spent on Metafilter. So it's still weird for me to stop and sort of decouple those sometimes
right.
And thinking about like, you know, talking to you about stuff, talking to Matt about stuff. You know, it's just such a dominant through line on sort of like that personal history together. That's like,
well,
yeah,
and
stepping
you still work
the
there, so it's part of your kind of day to day. Like, I was trying to explain at this wedding, like, how do I know these other people? I'm like, well, I don't know them, but we're all kind of like internet people. And they're like, well, what does that mean, internet people? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm famous on the internet, and I'm just trying to think of it. And I'm like, oh, Metafilter. Like, I ran that for, you know, a while. Oh, yeah. And then they knew what that was, even though they weren't sort of heavy users. And I was like, oh, thank God. Like, otherwise, I don't even know what it means.
I was having an abbreviated sort of explaining Metafilter conversation with someone from, oh geez, one of the manufacturing companies I've talked to in the last week because of that Ask Metafilter question about the house numbers, which I should just talk about that some because I thought I was going to have.
Can you please? Because I came into that story in the middle and I have no idea what is going on.
Yeah. So yeah, like you've probably seen it as much as anything on
Twitter.
Me tweeting incessantly about it. So there was this question on
Ask Metafilter.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of the date. April 30th. What was that, like a week ago? About that.
I don't know.
So, last Sunday or Monday. We don't say the day on the dateline, so I have to just...
Does it matter? It
doesn't really matter. I'm just...
Your computer has a calendar.
I'm trying to set a tone of uncertainty about timing. It's thematic. That's what it is. Anyway,
okay,
about a week ago.
Monday.
Okay, yeah. Monday, user John Gorin posts a question to Ask Metafilter, and he says, what's the typeface used on American street addresses? Specifically, you know, he's thinking about the last season of Twin Peaks. He's wondering what the distinctive font is used for street addresses, like a couple examples he pulls out.
Yeah.
You know, these are similar style in houses in California and other places, and I wonder where this started.
Because it is kind of a weird, non-serif-y, swoopy, like they don't just look like any regular... Like if you were just going to draw a number, they've got a little bit of panache to them in an odd way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got a specific sort of look to it. And I saw this question. I actually saw this question. I didn't come across it naturally. There was a flag on a comment in it. And this came up on Twitter. And I have very mixed feelings about this. So there was a comment, like a second comment in the thread is Kevin Belt saying, well, it's technically not a font because it's not type, but those are just standard house numbers. You can buy it at Home Depot with a link to the
Kevin
product.
is on Learned League too, by the way. He's one of my referrals.
Yeah, long time Miphite.
Yeah.
A goodie. This answer got flagged, I think, somewhat understandably as sort of like, well, that's not really answering any of the questions in it. You're just sort of saying you can buy them at Home Depot. But on the other hand, that
I don't know.
Link,
I think when you say, I wonder where this started, and somebody's like the most popular place to buy house numbers sells them that way.
Yeah, well, no, and that's the thing. So it ends up sort of connecting the where it started to where is it now thing. Because like if these are popular, they're being sold somewhere. And if they're being sold somewhere, they're being sold by someone. And there's questions to answer following that line of inquiry. And you know, so I saw this question. I checked out the flag. I was like, nah, that's okay. And then I started thinking about it. I was like, this is, And I started doing some Googling, thinking like, I'm going to solve this. And I did not solve
it. Isn't that a fun feeling, though?
It is.
I love that feeling. I do as much of that during my waking hours as possible, and it keeps me completely happy.
See, and I should do it more like this. Part of what I have learned from the last week of obsessing about this question is that while obsessing for an entire week about a question is probably not workable, I should really try and like put myself in this position on Ask Me more often because like
– Of course.
I don't tend to engage with human relations questions very much. They're just
well,
not
I mean,
my
why?
Bag.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, some people really do. And like my brother posts in them on a regular basis and provides good answers.
I see him doing that. I had a question about your brother, but maybe for later.
All right. But anyway, like this sort of thing, I feel like I could dig in on more. And I did dig in on this a bunch and I ended up like doing some research and leaving a thing saying, well, here's what I found so far. Which is a few things. I found a few things so far. I think I found where they started, with some help from someone who runs the Frere Jones, Twitter account, which is, they're a type company of some sort or design company or something. And they said, hey, you know, I've got a catalog that might be helpful. I can send you a scan when I get back to the office. Like, that'd be great. And the next morning they scanned a couple pages from a like circa 1927-ish supply catalog.
Dude, my seven is older than that.
Well, and so some of these things – or is this the graveyard one?
Yes.
Yes.
But if you look at that seven, it's very similar.
It's a similar seven. Yeah.
It's that same swoopy thing.
Yeah. The two is much more sort of filigree, but it's also definitely, they're both in the same general feeling as the font we're talking about. And I'll include a link to the font in, well, it's in the question, but I'll include some other stuff to post probably too when we post this. But basically it started, it seems like the earliest manufacturer I can find for this. And that doesn't mean it's when people started making it, but
of course,
H.W. Knight, and son from Seneca Falls, New York, was selling them in a catalog in the mid late 20s. And as Kevin Belt said in his answer about the Home Depot link, also said, well, it's not type, so it's not technically a font. But more to the point, I think it's not even, if you can be pedantic or not, I don't think, my feeling is that this even is like from a specific font or typeface. The impression I get looking at the catalog in 1927 is that this was a style, which your grave marker shows, like, is not, you know, something that was invented by these people. But right, like H.W. Knight created these, you know, metal forms,
the mass-produced version,
and that may have been when it started being a thing. You know, it may have been them. It may have been someone else. Like, it's one of those things where, like, if you can't find the evidence, it doesn't mean it's not there. But this is the oldest evidence I've been able to find of someone specifically.
Absence of evidence doesn't mean evidence of absence, or the other way around. Yeah.
But these folks were definitely selling this stuff in the early 20s or in the 20s.
Well, and Don Gorin, to be honest, is probably just kind of curious, not like, oh, please do your PhD thesis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
so
no,
that
I know.
Can know definitively. So that seems like a good, we've got this far. That's pretty far.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So it seems like a likely starting point anyway. But the things are still sold today, and they're not sold today by something that is a logical subsidiary of the original H.W. Knight. Like, so I've managed to track down, like, four different corporate narratives, each of which has produced a version of this at some point, some of which still do, some of which did and then don't anymore. And I've got basically the text file equivalent of Red String attached to a bunch of photographs that I will write at some point. But that Twitter thread I ended up making basically goes into all the real-time research and weird dalliances. And I've currently got a book out about house numbers that was the one book about house numbers I could find at the library. It was written a few years ago. And I kind of assumed it was going to be
Got a book out about house numbers?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a
Tell
book
me
called
more. There's house a book numbers. About house numbers?
Yes. House Numbers, A Forgotten History or something like that. I don't have it right next to me or I'd pull it out, but it's Anton something. And it's like 128 pages and it's got a bunch of pictures in it. And I sort of assumed when I checked it out that it was going to be a bunch of pictures and some fluffy writing, you know, some basically bathroom reader stuff. And instead it actually opens with what feels like kind of a strident libertarian thesis on the fundamentally, you know, unjust and, like, it's weird. It feels like it's basically taking the position of contempt for the very concept of the state and the house number as fundamentally a tool of surveillance and oppression. Which I think there's interesting arguments to be made there, but it's so not what I was expecting from this book full of pictures of house numbers.
Is it a compelling argument?
I was sort of cockeyed enough reading it and being surprised that that was even the tone that I feel like I need to go back and read through it again. I feel like it's a little bit sloppily written. It feels a little bit more polemic than, like, really staid thesis, you know. And so in that sense, it feels a little bit like someone growling on their blog, but in fancy words. But I don't know. It's weird. And I haven't, like, you know, there's 60 pages or so of text and I've gotten through the first 20 or so. So I'm kind of curious where it's going to go. But it's interesting, and it's been an interesting twist on this whole research project. But yeah, so I've been excited about that question, and I've been paying way too much attention to house numbers and tweeting about it and getting suggestions and feedback from people. And Bon Cliff is complaining that all of his Amazon results are now
saw that.
House numbers. And
sorry,
Kevin,
man.
Fabulous.
Not sorry.
Took pictures of his apartment building numbers. So I'm glad that maybe I'm infecting some people with this, because I can't not, like, look at every house I pass now and be like, okay, but is that – well, no, that's – but which manufacturer? I don't know. Is that new or is that old? You know, it's a whole thing. So anyway, that. that has been a good time, and I liked that Ask No Filter. Good job, John Gorin, for setting my brain on fire, apparently.
Well, I mean, this is the thing they talk about library people, right? Like, the line I've probably said it before on the podcast is that, like, librarians like to search, everyone else likes to find. And so you may have gotten to the point now where you too enjoy, the searching.
Yeah.
Haley was convinced that she had total rule all through middle school. She was basking in her power, but when Friday's first announcement came, it haunted her. A new hall monitor would be chosen after geography.
This isn't fair. I've been hall monitor for 2 years. 6 people put up their hands for me in a vote. Don't votes matter anymore? Does anyone just get to be hall monitor now? It's Stacy, isn't it? She's always been jealous of me.
And speaking of that, actually, that might be an okay lead into a sort of slightly related post by Ellie BOA, the one on people who love, well,
oh,
when
yeah,
the way
yeah.
you love things is too much is the title. But basically, yeah. it's an article in Catapult, basically about kind of how do you talk about the things you're super obsessed about in quote unquote polite conversation. And it's written by a woman who has autism. She's autistic, and she basically tried to sort of figure out, like, she's a nerd, you know, among nerds. And still, she's like, how much do you talk about the things
yeah.
with other people? And it's just an interesting article kind of from the inside out, right? Like, I know about my obsessions and how I feel about it, but I also feel like I'm, somewhere in the neurotypical range, I think. I mean, who knows, right? But I think so. But looking at somebody who's super into whatever the thing is and figuring out how much to talk about it when you know you're not neurotypical about these things.
Yeah.
It's just a really interesting article and turned into kind of a pretty interesting thread.
Yeah, I experienced that one more from a moderation perspective.
Yeah, it seemed a little.
But yeah, I thought that the portions of the conversation that I wasn't like helping manage, enjoyed and thought were interesting. So,
well, it's difficult, right? Because, I mean, autism specifically, because there's so many people who share that characteristic who are perfectly happy sort of speaking for themselves, you know, as opposed to like people who have other kinds of disabilities who maybe also can't be quite as communicative about it. You get a whole bunch of people who are like, this is how it feels from the inside of my head. And then you get other people being like, oh God, I talked to you at a party once and it was super whatever. And I don't know. It's interesting to look at that sort of social issue from a whole bunch of different directions.
Yeah.
But yes, there were some Metafilter people who definitely really couldn't sort of manage that conversation the way maybe they needed to.
Yeah.
Which was ironic given the topic of conversation. But yep. It's also really interesting, so I think people should read it and would learn things.
Yeah. Gosh, what else did I get up to this month with the Metafilter? Oh, you know, Eyebrows McGee asked me to tell people thanks for all the good answers and help on her question about Victorian sneaky sex.
I love this question. This question was so interesting. So Eyebrows McGee is like writing a thing, and she's got two characters who's supposed to have this kind of like liaison, and they're kind of well off. Like, where did they connect to hook up? And it's not like a central part of the story, so it just needs to be kind of, you know, a minor issue, but they can't check in a hotel for reasons, you know, but it's important that they have some place to hook up. All right, Victorian-ish, how does this work? And it was super fun. There was a whole bunch of people who had, different ways to kind of work through and around that specific problem. You know, hooking up in a horse-drawn carriage,
yeah.
Church, the library. The same place as everybody hooks up nowadays, honestly. But I thought it was fun to read.
Yep.
Yeah, I actually didn't comment in a single Metafilter thread for the entire month of April because I was so busy taxing. So there was a whole bunch of stuff, of course, that I looked at on Metafilter and looked at on Ask Metafilter. Do you want to start with either one of them?
Let's jump into some Metafilter.
Okay. So we were talking about that other Metafilter, and I really liked this post, Movable Book Lady and I feel like we're on kind of the same wavelength.
Yeah.
And this was an article from Hakai Magazine about coastal science and coastal societies and basically things that are written on the outside of ships.
Oh, yeah.
Like big ships. That are really only supposed to be a thing that other people, like, that boats are supposed to look at, right? Yeah. Like, it has nothing to do with you and your human eyeballs, but, like, what can you see and what does it mean? And so there's some beautiful photography, and I learned a couple things.
Yeah, no, I saw that go by, and that's on my get back to it list because I really enjoyed the glimpses I saw. It was, like, a busy day or something. It was, like, fucking boat language, that's sweet. I'll get back to it. And like so many things, it just sort of wanders off in the distance.
Yeah, but fun thread, kind of perfect Metafilter post as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. I liked this little post from Space Burglar about printing techniques. Just looking at non-press printing techniques with, you know, like woodcuts and linoleum and transfer
and
methods.
Metafilter's own Woodblock 100 is in the very first one. Yes. So cool.
As always, super, super pleasant to see him pop up. Not a whole lot to say about it. It's just like some nice videos of printing techniques and stuff. And if you feel like chilling out for that, go do it because it's cool.
Yeah. That is nice. Oh, one of the things that I really liked a lot, which I thought was maybe going to go weird and sideways, and did not. I don't think it did. Was Molly Ringwald. So, like, if you were me and you grew up in the 80s, like, the John Hughes movies with Molly Ringwald were basically either what your life was or what you kind of hoped your life might be. You know what I mean? Like, they were kind of a typicality that was accessible to sort of outsiders and nerds and not just like weird princess stuff or weird whatever. So those movies were incredibly formative to me. And Molly Ringwald has kind of grown up to be a, you know, super interesting lady with daughters of her own. And she talks about looking at the Breakfast Club movies and her relationship with John Hughes, who has died, and, you know, about what that was like and some of the things she said about the movies at the time, things that changed, some of the things she did not say at the time. And she looks at them now and she's like, oh God, wincy in the age of sort of Me Too and everything else. She watches the movies with her teenage daughter and talks about kind of the things, the conversations they had. Fascinating. The article itself, fascinating, looking at how those movies hold up in 2018, because I kind of thought about it, but I never really thought about it.
Yeah.
And so it was, and she's a very well-spoken and interesting person. So it was really interesting as an article. Like, it was probably the best, like, long-form article that I read from Metafilter this month. And it was interesting hearing other people talk about how things were formative or not formative for them if the movies hit them at, you know, the right time, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is an interesting sort of collective generational stop and look back, because it does feel like part of it is how much they were not just like, oh, that was the movie that was popular, but that was like the social milieu and commentary and touchstone so much for a lot of people who grew up around that John Hughes era. So like people look back at Star Wars and like, okay, there's this huge nostalgia for Star Wars and whatnot, but people weren't really sort of modeling their social sensibilities on Star Wars the same way people might have sort of.
Right. And Star Wars wasn't also reflecting as much of a social sensibility as Breakfast Club or whatever.
Yeah. So
some of the messaging that the movies had.
Yeah. Like Star Wars doesn't really have the capacity to get in the same kind of retroactive trouble of changing mores looking back. Cause like, well, yeah, back then we thought lasers were okay, but you know, it's like, yeah. So yeah, no, it's really interesting. And yeah, she seems pretty great. Also, she's Archie Andrews's mom on Riverdale.
Oh, so I have not watched Riverdale, but neat.
Technically, that's a spoiler. They tease a lot of absent parents who then turn out to be an actor you recognize when they finally show up on the show, but it's not really it. Yeah. Plus, that show is such a goddamn mess. Someone was saying, I saw this on Twitter somewhere recently, someone saying something about the idea of Riverdale as an exquisite corpse project where each episode is written by someone who's only seen the like immediate preceding episode. Which
I always felt like that's what Lost was about, to be perfectly honest. But yeah.
I feel like there may be a similar sort of thing going on there. Some vague arc of aspirations and then like zero discipline or follow through with it. But anyway.
Right, no showrunner.
She's on it, so there you go. If you want some Molly Ringwald, boom. I enjoyed this post, You Absolute Coat Hanger by Hurdy Gurdy Girl, which is a post. It's just a post of like a funny conversation.
Wait, was it about the Absolute Unit?
It wasn't, was it? No, it was sort of playing
was
off
there
of that.
A filter post about the Absolute Unit? Okay,
there probably
talk,
was. Yeah. So this is only sort of related. This is a Tumblr post. Conversation on Tumblr about using various prepended adjectives to say things. So like, you know, you can make nearly any object into a good insult if you put "you absolute" in front of it. For example, "you absolute coat hanger."
Right.
As well, you can add "ed" to an object and it sounds like you were really drunk. Example, "I was absolutely coat hangered last night." And it just sort of goes on from there. And it's just funny. It's like Tumblr – a few people on Tumblr riffing on a thing, and then it turns into a Metafilter thread of people riffing on a thing, and then people trying to prize out some of the inconsistencies or difficulties. And I think the absolute unit, the sheep, does come up somewhere in the context of all that too. But it's just a fun thread.
Yeah, people do talk about that. And then there was a earlier thread on Metafilter about the absolute unit, which, oh my God, I have not enjoyed the internet so much as I did during the 2 or 3 days. Like, it just kind of hit me in the feels for some reason. I don't know why. You know, it was basically so.
It was just really wonderful and joyful.
It's the Museum of English Rural Life texted a picture of a big fat ram, and the entire text is, "Look at this absolute unit." And for whatever reason, it's a black and white photo of a sheep, a ram. And for whatever reason, it just took the hell off. And the Metafilter thread is, you know, the AV News article about the thing. But basically, they've got like a 28-year-old social media guy who not only posted this one thing, which whatever, but when it hit in this kind of viral way, was ready for it. And so not only kind of did a whole bunch of very interesting parlaying and bouncing back and forth and enjoying the jokes and whatever, but like they changed the name of the Twitter account from the Museum of Rural Life to the Museum of Absolute Units for a couple days and posted a whole bunch of stuff about their library, which made me lose my mind because it was so cool, talking about like how they found the picture and what kinds of stuff they have in the Library of Museum Rural Life and, you know, riffing back and forth with a whole bunch of other people. And the guy who does it, you know, wrote a Medium article about, you know, his I guess they say thick boy. I got to learn the word thick, which I actually did not know. I mean, I didn't – I whatever. You can figure out what the hell it is.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know it. And yeah, it was just so cool. And the guy's article for Medium is just hilarious and good. And so it was just a thing you could just enjoy. There was nothing wrong with it, to the best of my knowledge. There was no problematic aspects of it. It was just something goofy, takes off, et cetera. And the Metafilter thread, I think, was kind of before or after it because the thread's like 19 comments.
Yeah, you know? No, it seems like it could have gotten bigger than it was. I think it just like hit in a weird way, but I'm glad it got documented. People. Let's just assume I'm shouting people. There's a new artist drawing the cartoon strip Nancy. Did you see this?
No. I mean, I was wondering why people were talking about Nancy all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's because after many years of the previous artist, a new artist has taken over the strip, and it's someone going pseudonymously by Olivia James. And whoever she is, she's doing a good job. And it's weird because it's like it's both dotingly Nancy and also really clearly being drawn and written in the 21st century. Because it's like lots of coming out of the gate with a lot of sort of like social media and communication jokes.
Yeah.
But it's been interesting because like it's one of those things where like, yeah, it's a crusty, fusty old strip. But to some extent,
that
it's
gotten
people.
I think a lot of people were like, that's still a thing?
Yeah. It's like, wait, Nancy still exists? And it turns out part of it is Nancy still exists. I mean, these things exist in syndication forever because whatever, it's what people are used to seeing. And going super modern with the writing for Nancy is kind of a weird trick because it's a fusty old strip and it's been really sort of stagnating for a while. And so giving people what they want by keeping the strip around, but then not giving them what they want by writing something fresh and new. It's a weird, like,
right.
Is it going to work out? But in the meantime, the strips are good. They're funny and they're weird. And Nancy was originally written and drawn by a guy named Ernie Bushmiller back, you know, early 20th century. And it was like a weird, surreal, absurdist gag strip back then. And that's what it is now. It's just a gag about, you know, social media now, as much as it's going to be a gag about people having a water hose fight.
Right, but it's good. Right. Well, and I don't know about you, but for me, it was kind of a real awakening at the point at which I realized that like people who are sort of illustrators and comic book artists, like they draw in their own style, but in a lot of cases they can write or draw in any style. I mean, not everybody, but a lot of people who do comics could just as well take over somebody else's comic. You know, like they could do Peanuts or whatever, and it wouldn't quite be Charles Schulz, but it wouldn't totally not be.
Sure.
You know, that for a lot of artists, I mean, I think I learned this when I was, you know, reading about Mad Magazine. And yeah. So, you know, there'd be certain things that were like done by a person, but then other things like the covers were done by kind of the random, a different person each time.
Yeah.
And illustrators and illustration was a lot more flexible than I had ever really thought about, because as a person who doesn't really draw, the just being able to draw in my own style would be a big deal, but yeah. Like drawing in someone else's style would be impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it seems like a whole complicated subdiscipline of its own.
Yeah. So yes, I loved it.
Yep.
A couple other like little kind of library of stuff things that I like from Metafilter include Catullus's BBC sound effects, free to download sound effects from the BBC, 16,000 of them, lots of interesting, weird stuff. Go check, go make some ringtones.
Nice.
And then this post by Cuke, which is a guy's YouTube channel that just has a lot of old-timey film.
Huh.
On it, and kind of old black and white footage of lots of different random stuff that's kind of really fun to click around on.
Yeah, no, I totally didn't see that.
Yeah, that's no, neat. Yeah, I thought so.
I dug a couple other things, and then we can move on to Ask. I liked this write-up, Fearful Symmetry posted an article about sort of developments in a blue pigment, and the fellow who discovered it looking for a red. And it's sort of the article is a good read because it sums up some of the stuff going on. So this guy discovered this blue several years ago. I want to say like 2009 or something. And has been sort of like going through development stuff with it since then. People who want to use, you know, pigments for industrial and commercial color processes want to be real sure about like how well it stands up for one thing. So it's one of those things where you actually have to spend years testing something to really definitively establish how it's going to behave over time.
Like, because part of it is just the time aspect
of
it.
Yeah. You can accelerate some of that to some extent by changing conditions, but you really have to stress test it. Cause if you're going to paint something on the assumption that's going to stay nice and vibrant for 30 years, you aren't going to say, oh, hey, well, we've had it for a week and it sounds good, so let's just run with it, you know. But the article talks about like looking for a safe, stable, cheap red too, because reds are also kind of tricky, and there's plenty of reds out there. But
reds are always the ones that fade off of the bumper stickers, right?
Well, yeah.
A lot of times for whatever reason.
Yeah. So like light fastness and, you know, durability under strong lighting conditions is like a big aspect of color. Like there's a lot of really vibrant colors that are vibrant as long as like, you know, you just deployed them and don't expose them to the world at all, but that doesn't work right. So well.
Keep them in a box.
So
that's the thing. If you're printing it in a magazine, it's totally different than if you're painting it on the side of a storage tank.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you go and look at shops, like I always think of like hair salons with old posters. Like they put up a poster like 5-10 years ago in the window of, you know, some hairstyle or, you know, someone selling glasses or something. And you walk by it, and today it's just like, it's nothing but blue. It's like blue and white and it's totally faded. It's because the light fastness of that blue ink is a whole lot better than the light fastness of whatever the, you know, yellow and red inks were. They just didn't stand up to that, you know, radiation essentially over time from all the sunlight.
Right.
And so, yeah, there are reds that are very, very light fast. Iron oxide is sort of like a classic and it holds up really well, but it's not a big, bright, vibrant cherry red. You know, it's more of an earthy, rusty sort of red. So people want everything. They want it to be bright. They want it to be cheap. They want it to be light fast. They want it to be non-toxic. And it's partly sort of about the idea of like, well, maybe the process we use to generate this blue can generate that red if we look in the right place. Because they generated other colors based on that same formulation. But they haven't got the red yet. So it's sort of talking about that. It's a nice read.
A work in process.
Yeah.
A work in progress.
There was also a big discussion on Metafilter about a much bigger discussion on and around Stack Overflow. And
Read this on Metafilter, but I was very following it on the larger internet.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes. And I left some longish comments on it because you would be surprised to hear I have thoughts about like moderation and online communities and whatnot. But it's a couple hundred comments of discussion on Metafilter. Sort of about people's experiences with Stack Overflow and what does work and what doesn't. And it's got that inevitable sort of tension to it of, you know, in total in the thread, you have a big mix of people with a variety of levels of experience with Stack Overflow and a variety of experiences. And it's a mix of people who like use Stack Overflow a lot and actually identify as, you know, sort of Stack Overflow is one of their homes on the internet. And then there's people who use it a lot.
You see that with Reddit a lot too, that people are like, I'm Reddit identified versus I've used Reddit and I can tell you the mechanics of Reddit.
Yeah. So that whole spectrum is there and people have various experiences. And in this context, a lot of people are sort of talking critically about things they don't like about Stack Overflow culture or their experiences. But then you inevitably get sort of like this people who identify strongly with Stack Overflow are like, hey, why are people being so mean about this? And people who are like trying to be nuanced about it. Like,
fire.
Yeah. And so it's complicated the way you would expect, you know, there's a variety of stuff and mostly a bunch of good discussion and a little bit of hothead into this popping up here or there, but it's a pretty good read. And it's a much better read than basically every thread I've seen on Stack Overflow about it, which has been really kind of dispiriting because there's a lot of, you can understand the dynamic of defensiveness coming up there, like the same way, like if someone's talking critically about Metafilter and that comes up in MetaTalk, there's going to be people being defensive about Metafilter. You know, I've certainly been that person to some extent, you know, with varying levels of justification. But so like the dynamic's understandable, but it's really kind of disconcerting having seen things get more thoughtful and more sort of nuanced in how Metafilter as a community tends to deal with these subjects. Read Stack Overflow's community kind of basically saying, well, there's not a problem in any way. If there's a problem, you didn't frame it right. And anyway, even if
or
you did frame it right.
You're the wrong kind of person and you shouldn't be here anyhow.
Yeah. And the actual problem is this. And what do you mean? Like, I know a guy who is a person of color on the site. So clearly it's welcoming to people of color.
Yeah. I mean, we're all familiar with it.
Yeah. Basically every way you can kind of expect it to go has shown up. And that's
well, and that's why I appreciated that Jay Hanlon wrote like a really long bit about it.
Yeah.
That's like, actually, if our website's full of assholes, it's our fault.
Yeah.
You know, and talked about that and like what they needed to do as a company because they couldn't make each individual person do a thing.
Yeah. And Joel Spolsky and Jeff Atwood both have posted on their blogs about related stuff recently. And
although, man, I saw Atwood getting into it with Anil over Twitter. And normally if you had just said like Atwood and Anil are fighting, who is right? Like I would have an opinion without even reading what they said. And this conversation that I saw went a different direction and I was surprised.
Yeah.
Like without getting too into it because it doesn't matter.
Sure.
Like they were on different sides of this in a way that surprised me.
Well,
you know what I mean?
And
like
I
would expect them to be on different sides. I was surprised to see some of what both of them said.
Well, and Anil showed up in the Metafilter thread to say, well, here's some thoughts from my perspective as, you know, full disclosure, a board member. And some people are like, well, yeah, but that's that's kind of not what I was sort of hoping slash expecting to hear from you on that because this and whatnot.
Right.
But, so yeah,
well,
I can see.
That's exactly it. And I think also like, you know, Anil, because he runs a big tech company too, has a very particular perspective on like what's possible, what's practical, what Stack Overflow is trying to do. And also it's super interesting with him because he's still like an old school dude in tech, despite the fact that I don't think he's, you know, part of bro culture at all.
Yeah.
He's friends with those guys and doesn't always have the perspective on it I would expect. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's the texture that brings to sort of like the dynamics of the kind of conversation is interesting.
Yeah. And I don't know Jeff Atwood that much. He sent me a yo-yo in the mail recently though. So that was nice. But I kind of expected Atwood to be a little bit like he was. A little surprised how Anil was. And just, you know, apropos of nothing, Hanlon posted this also onto Medium, and I actually posted a response. Not a long one, but a short one. Just because I just finished up teaching my community engagement class at the University of Hawaii, and it was all about teaching people how to engage with communities, mostly in real life, not online. But we had assignments to interact with online communities. I made them like do an edit on Wikipedia for one lib, one ref, and I made them get an account at Stack Exchange and interact with one of the communities there. And I understand the Stack Overflow, Stack Exchange line is confusing too. You know, like Stack Exchange is a platform. Stack Overflow is one specific instance of that platform, though arguably the most important, or not important, but like most
visible. It's like the touchstone.
Yeah. And so I had my students interact there, and like out of 14 students, 11 of them hated it. You know what I mean? And the two that didn't were people who had niche expertise. Like one of them was like a fish, you know, aquarium fish expert and found her aquarium fish people that she and was really stoked about it. And one of them was like a comic book nerd guy. And everyone else was like, wow, those people were rude. or stuff. And like, whatever, you know, some of it's just, hey, you throw people into the deep end and it's not going to be a pleasant experience no matter what. But some of it was like to a person, they could identify pretty easily that it's not a place for noobs for a number of reasons, even though I think there's a lot of things that are baked into the platform that should be making it more like that. So I think the interesting part of that conversation is you tried to bake in so much positive engagement stuff. Oh my God, it's still not working. You know, like what is it about your community that means that even those things don't kind of fix it?
Yeah.
And you know, part of it is they're just a little bit more hands-off than, I mean, you know, Metafilter is high touch, right? Like I always say, and you know, Stack Overflow is very much not.
Yeah. So, and you know, I mean, it was intentionally designed to be sort of like, you know, sort of tool and tool set driven rather than driven, which, you know,
that's how you get what you get, you know,
especially at scale. That's part of it too.
It was intended to have scalability to a level that, you know, Metafilter doesn't, but I found that whole thing fascinating, but I hadn't read this thread. So I'll go back.
Yeah. I think it's worth a read.
Take a look at it. And it's recent actually. It's just from
last week. Yeah. It's just, from like a week ago,
which is interesting because didn't that all happen longer ago than that?
The post from Jay, I think, was basically contemporary to that. Like, I think it was that day or so.
Man, I've had some time compression then.
There's,
okay,
I mean,
well,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. What time feeling weird lately? I don't.
New York. Mines were made by an elegant beast. Leading me down straight to the feast. Fire in his eyes and fire in the tomb. He almighty.
You want to talk about some Ask Metafilter?
I would like to. There were a lot of kind of survey questions that I enjoyed, starting with slightly earlier in the month. What is this stuff in the toilet?
I did not see this one.
Well, it didn't really go the way you thought. But basically, you know, you go into a public restroom, especially like a ladies' room. So you're using like a toilet, not a urinal. Why is there like this weird shredded paper clump in it? By the way, here's a picture. And, you know, people sort of talk about like, why is you know, how do people use public restrooms? You know, they make these weird ass gasket things. You know, they have often they have like toilet paper that's supposed to disintegrate, but doesn't. Flush mechanisms work differently, blah. So it wasn't a very long thread, but it was kind of interesting. And I was like, hey, I know the answer to this one because I spent a lot of time in public restrooms and it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, that's great. Totally missed that. I thought this was interesting. There's a question from, it was 100 Jars of Sky. Asking about the practice of giving your parents an allowance and what form and what quantity that takes. And this is specifically, and I'm glad it worked out that way, basically say, hey, here's a very specific sort of like Chinese cultural thing. Can I get answers from people with that experience? And the thread did not fill up with like, well, as a person born and raised in Michigan to, you know, white Methodist, you know, parents, I've never heard of the, you know, it's like,
right.
People
fuck
actually,
your mom.
Yeah. People actually read the question and, didn't answer if they didn't have anything to answer basically, which is great. And, this whole thing, like unfamiliar to me, I hadn't been exposed to that practice at all. So, it was interesting to learn about.
Yeah, no, I didn't know about it either. I found it interesting. And, you know, cause I've just got my sort of, again, my sort of New England Caucasian upbringing, and I have very specific ideas about sort of my culture's practice towards money and your parents. Like, it's not just like, oh, I never thought about it. It's like, no, I've seriously thought about it. And like, it was always like a thing with my mother, like who would pay for lunch kind of thing. And it changed according to some very specific milestones, you know? And so it was fascinating reading, you know, slightly different culture versions of expectations, because yeah. I understand the expectations and sort of how we did or did not line up with them. And then this is different.
Yep.
I enjoyed it. I also enjoyed sort of this survey question by Queen Sissy about like, all right, doggy bags. And
oh,
I feel
yeah.
like we've seen this before.
Probably.
Maybe. Although,
I mean, I can imagine like a dozen different directions for it to like come into like ending up asking a question related to this. But yeah.
I feel like I've seen it before, but I didn't find it with the obvious tags. And now that we've got like similar tag search, which, oh my God, am I so happy about that. Frimble, you are amazing. Yeah. So basically like, you know, you go to a restaurant, you eat some food, you got some leftover, you take it home. Yes or no. Is that considered gauche? Is that even a thing you can do? Why or why not? Blah. And like one of the things that's really interesting about this, which I don't think about from being inside the US, but which a lot of people pointed out about the US, is that US portion sizes are gigantic in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And the whole concept that you could like eat one whole meal to a lot of people, especially outside the US, is bonkers. And so if you went to a restaurant outside the US, the concept of having so much food, you would need a doggy bag is also a weirder concept because the portion sizes aren't nuts. Like at this yeah. wedding that I went to, the bride was from the UK and the groom was from the US. And, you know, I did lots of small talk with sort of lots of people and everybody from, and, you know, you ask like, oh, where'd you go eat in Boston? What kind of food do you have? Whatever. And to a person, everyone was like, and my God, your portion sizes. I was like, I know it's the strangest damn thing. I mean, this wedding actually had like a hamburger bar after the wedding and then a full catered sit down dinner. It had like a dinner and then a dinner. And I told Jim this and he's like, oh my God, you didn't go to the hamburger bar? I was like, I was having dinner in 45 minutes. No, that's two meals. I eat two meals a day, not two meals every 2 hours. At any rate, this thread has a lot of Mephites from a lot of different countries talking about doggy bag etiquette, including some people from Canada. I think it's Victoria, where there was basically like a food poisoning problem. Like somebody took something home and it had been sitting at like the danger zone temperature for too long.
Yeah.
And so now they don't let, or there's kind of a convention that restaurants don't do it, which I didn't know and I never thought about it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, a lot of people from Australia talking about it and a lot of people from different countries. And it always makes me really happy because seeing lots of different Mephites from a lot of different backgrounds and cultures. Like, I often enjoy those threads the most.
Yeah.
Instead of, God, what was the thread where everybody was arguing with each other? No, I'm oh, that really, one. I'm really not narrowing it down. Hold on. Oh, like the Hamilton tickets thread.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I saw someone tweet like, hey, Lynn, you want to look at this? And I was like, oh, please don't. Please let Lynn not look at this.
It was basically Soul on Ice. Her, his friend, their friend.
Their friend.
Her friend. Well, I tried, you know, I've been working on my pronouns. Her friend. Bought season tickets to some place that one of the tickets was Hamilton. And then, like, predicated on the fact that Soul on Ice had said she was going to go to Hamilton. Like, hey, you want to go to Hamilton? I'll just buy season tickets and then you can buy your ticket for me. Great, great. And then the friend was like, so, elaborate money calculation. Your ticket costs $350. And Soul on Ice was like, great, whatever, I'll pay because friendship. But was like, I feel weird about this because my friend also bought a ton of other tickets for $1,000 total and went to a bunch of other shows. What's fair? And see, of course, whenever you say,
I know, like that's the problem. Like, not to say don't ask it. Like, I hope they got something useful out of it. But like, there's almost like it's almost never the right question. Like, what's fair is not the question. The question is, should I not go in with this friend in this type of transaction in the future? Yes, thank you. End of question. Like, you know, it's like,
well, see,
you've learned.
This is why you don't answer human relation questions.
I know,
because
right?
The answer "it depends" makes you itch.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was fascinating.
Well, I mean,
the problem had already been solved. I paid for the tickets, so whatever.
Yeah.
What I was actually surprised at is how many people in the thread, because, you know, Soul on Ice was like, I already paid for the tickets, so that's not the issue. Were like, your friend's a bitch. Like who were like offended on behalf of Soul on Ice that they would be asked to pay for those tickets.
Yeah.
Which I see the perspective, but like, it just seemed to me that, like, I mean, and my perspective is different, obviously, and I was a person who commented in the thread, but like, it was just interesting that, like, you kind of almost insult the person who decided to pay for it.
Yeah.
By saying, you know, your friend is a horrible person.
Yeah.
Kind of. At a certain point, your friend's got some weird ideas about money, which, yeah.
Like, your failure to react as overtly to your friend's behavior as I, a third party, am reacting is on you. You know, it can have that feeling, which is like, that's not great. That's not great.
Yeah, but, so the thread was super strange.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot about how other people look at money. And again, because I've got kind of weird things about money, my whole perspective is just to ask. But, you know, then there's people in the thread who are like, ugh. People who talk about money all the time drive me crazy. And I'm like, otherwise, you get this.
Yep.
But funny, interesting thread to read, but glad that I, you know, I'm not trying to go to the theater with most of these people.
Yep. Speaking of multiple cultural takes on a subject.
I love this.
Can I ask you a question? Do animals have faces, Jessamine?
What?
Do animals have faces?
Well, sure.
Okay, there we go. I don't know why this thread was so long then. No, I really enjoyed this. This was Lawlisk asking after basically help me adjudicate a debate, which translates roughly to a friend of mine insisted on something that I find nutso, which is always a good start.
My friend is an idiot. Do you agree?
Yeah. Do animals have faces? Yes, no. And it turns out the answer may depend somewhat on the specific language you're discussing in. Like in English, we say face when we're talking about an animal's face, if you believe animals have faces, about a human face. Someone noted that in Italian, there's two different words that would be used for the face of a person or face of an animal. So it's sort of
like a face of a human is a different word than the face of an animal.
Yeah. So like if there's that common semantic distinction, then of course, you know, it's different. But anyway, there's a pile of answers talking both about like attestable English usage and other languages and also just sort of like throwing in like, you know, social theory and context.
A tick doesn't have a face. A tick has a head.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I'm kind of inclined to agree with, but at the same time, I could be argued into identifying the face of a tick if it came down
right.
to that.
Anticipation of a new lover's arrival is like, hey, this jumping spider has a face. Prove me wrong. You know, that spider really does have a face.
I was asking people at the last XOXO I went to a couple of years ago, just conversationally, you know, our ears part of the face. And most people said, yeah, what the fuck? And
oh, a couple I don't think
they are. Well, see, that's the thing. A couple of people said no. And then, like, you know, I was so happy when some people said no because I really wanted it to be something that had room for discussion. And I kind of feel like no-ish. Like, yeah,
I think
the face
your
is...
facial characteristics don't include your ears.
Yeah.
But, I, you know, again, like, I wouldn't ruin a party over it.
I'm shutting this thing down.
Well, because, you know, like, there's some people who just, like, need to find something to fight about. And I wouldn't fight with somebody about it. But I would be like, well, I don't really think so. Oh, you do? Okay, great. You know, life's rich pageant.
Yeah.
No, the end.
Yeah, I enjoy hearing people's reasoning, basically, is what I'm getting out of it. Like,
yeah.
there's something about, you know, hearing people break down the sort of feelings and the thoughts and the classifications behind the answers, like, really what I'm interested in. Because I don't think there is, like, an answer, obviously. It's like, you know, yes or no are both responses it produces.
Sure.
But yeah.
Well, and, you know, to me, this Animals Have Faces third was basically answered my feels and needs more cowbell, which is the first response in the thread, are the same. Like, vegetarian used to be nothing with a face. People would understand that. I'm white East Coast Jewish, too. So that's, you know, it's interesting to me that their answer and my answer are so completely kind of the same. Well, and if you want to talk about contentious framing, let's talk about why the hell do you like live music?
That was in my
by
clipboard.
Pot Supek, which I always find it a little strange when people use sock puppets and then ask questions that are a little needly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and there's such a thing at this point too, like, is it a pop is a sock puppet? Or is it like someone who signed up with, you know, a, like, I need to get out from this old username, or just someone who signed up with a username in the first place trying to riff on it? And in this case,
exactly.
I think this is just this person's account at this point. Like, you know, there's nothing sketchy going on with multiple accounts, but they're just regularly using the one that has a reference to the idea of, and there's a bunch of accounts like that that are, you know, so yeah, it's always a little bit weird. And I think it makes people hitch an extra eyebrow. Like you say, like, when it's like, well, why are you using this account? You know, without it being possible to tell them, like, well, that is my account. You know?
And so this basically starts off. I mean, I'm a little surprised you guys let this go.
I was going to bring this up as this
because
is like
it's
my
basically like live music sucks. Am I right? And you know, there's a whole bunch of people who are like, no, you are not right.
Yeah.
Like there are, but basically, this person feels live music is kind of not great. Like,
yeah,
you have to sit through the bad songs. Musicians aren't good. I don't get it. So please explain to me what you like about it. And I feel like the question got better under the fold. Like,
yeah.
I know it's me, but I'm really having a hard time with this. And then my favorite part is the last four words of the question are like, but I love theater because I hate theater. And so I'm kind of like, what? Like, I can understand not liking any live experience for a number of reasons, right? But like, really? Theater is what you like?
Yeah.
But you don't like music? What? So again, I learned some things about how other people experience the world.
Yeah. And that's what I thought was really interesting. And so this is, I was going to say, this
and there's
is like
a lot of people who really took the question seriously.
Yeah.
And the OP came back later and was like, hey, thank you. Like, I wasn't trying to be shitty. I really am having a hard time understanding this.
Yeah.
And I think it got even better after that.
That was the thing I liked. And that's what kept me around. Like you say, once you get below the fold, it gets like there's this acknowledgement that like, hey, I get this. This is something that other people actually feel differently about rather than just like being another iteration of like, it's so dumb and I hate it.
Right.
You know, like that, I would have nixed as is the framings. It's not great, but there were bones there. There was some serious bones inside the question and people took to those. And so if the response initially had just been like shitty, I was like, nope, let's just scrap this. But I was like, I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let some flags go by and run with it. And it paid off and I'm happy that worked out because it was really interesting.
There's a comment that's got my favorite kind of live music thing that I was not a participant in, but like, when Tom Petty sings like the first line of Breakdown and then the audience just sings the next, you know, couple parts of it together, which always gives me chills just because I think it's so cool. Also, I miss Tom Petty like crazy.
Yeah.
And I was happy that somebody showed up to toss that in the thread because it was a great example.
Yep. Any other asks you want to mention?
It for me with Asminafilter. Right. I was going to, you know, make sure you mentioned the tag thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys made any decisions about Google Stupid AMP thing, but I know there was a talk about it.
Oh,
and I wanted to mention the Metafilter Card Club because even though for some whatever reason I can't get it to work for me, just because I don't know me and my personal problems, it has been a really cool thing, and I'm very excited that
the Card Club continues on. It continues to be a cool thing. If you like the idea of sending people cards, go check it out.
Also,
yeah, it's my birthday. I'm 39.
Happy birthday, Josh. That's good age.
Yep, I've gotten and made at least two or three variations on, you know, nice, which I'm enjoying the outright absurdity of, like, it mutating into just like something a stone throw away. We should revisit that whole like 69 nice thing sometime, because I have like,
oh, I'm basically pretending it doesn't exist. It's like some dumb boy thing on the internet, and I refuse to diplomatically recognize it because it's Matt's thing and it's ridiculous.
I didn't know
it's beneath
Matt's thing.
All of you.
Yeah, it's stupid, but it's our stupid.
I know. It's your stupid. Let's just put it that way.
The tag search thing. Let's talk about that briefly. Going to Maine had brought up the idea of trying to better handle people misspelling things in tags when searching, and basically said, hey, can we have it so it does kind of fuzzy
matches? Well, not even misspelling, but like cat wouldn't find cats.
Well, yeah. Cat would find cats. Cats wouldn't find cat.
Sorry, I am sorry.
That's the thing, right? Like, some of it's like dumb little bits of just like what works well. It's easier to search for cat and find every matching tag that contains the word cat.
Right, but that gets crazy.
It's harder. Yeah. That was kind of already in place. Like, it's really easy to search a list of tags for a specific substring, but then to take a superstring and search a list of tags for portions of that gets more complicated.
Right, so, is not simple at all.
Yeah, and a lot of this is, it's tricky because like some of it can be very computationally demanding, which is a problem because we don't want people bringing down the site by searching for stuff. But some of it can be done fairly cleanly, or if you make some assumptions or simplify things, it can be done. And so basically it was a Frimble project, like, hey, how doable is this? And it turns out kind of doable. So Frimble just rolled out a modified version of tag search that also includes sort of hand-wavily matched similar tags. And
Frimble did a really good job at presentation, I felt, too.
They always do.
Because it's sorted out, so you can kind of see, like, these are things I think are the same word, these are things that are similar but not the same word, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, they put a nice explanation of the thread sort of breaking down the thinking behind it and what does work and how it works, which is really nice. So, yeah, good job, Frimble. Also, good job, Frimble, bringing the site back from a hardware failure cascade, essentially, on Amazon's side is what happened. Like, the other day, Friday, I guess that was, site just got real sluggish for a while and then just sort of stopped not being there at all. And it turns out we had to sort of search around, and it's a little bit of like a, you know, wild goose chase stuff going on until we finally pinned it down. And by we, I'm mostly being Frimble here. And then got it fixed, which was a little bit of a time consuming effort itself because we had to like replace a backup server that the database used, and we had to bring the database down. And that's a time consuming thing to do. Well, bringing it down is not time consuming. That goes very quickly. But bringing back up the database really kind of like loads a lot of stuff into memory. And usually it's sort of doing that piecewise as new threads come along, and it just keeps everything. It's like a great big, flywheel that's turning very fast and, you know, moving a lot of stuff around, but as long as it's running smoothly, that just sort of keeps happening day to day, minute to minute.
Right.
But starting it up, if you try and start up that big heavy wheel, it takes some effort and things run slow. And if everybody wants to have access to the wheel while you're trying to spin it up, it gets that much trickier. So we ended up with about 6 hours of partial or total downtime on Friday while Frimble worked on it and got everything back up and in gear, and yes, they did a fantastic job, and I really appreciate that they were there to do that despite being, you know, traveling and busy parenting. So good job, Frimble.
Nice work, Frimble. Very happy about that.
Also, people want to know if your pet is on Instagram. Zushin Frog posts this. Zushin Fog, excuse me, posts this a couple weeks ago.
I missed this entirely.
Yeah, hey. So a thread full of people showing off their Instagram pets. So if you want some pets, go to that thread. If you want to share your pet Instagram, go to that thread.
Oh.
The amp thing awesome. You mentioned was. I'll throw in a link for the heck of
it. Hey, you got a leaf blower going on next door.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's like a. It's like maybe even a chainsaw or something. It's hard to say. It's certainly making some noise.
I can only hear it a little bit, but I was like, is that my leaf blower and chainsaw? Nope, it's yours. Hey.
Yep. So the amp thing you mentioned, it's not really a policy question on our end so much. It was kind of like what to do when they're making a post, include a Google amp link, you know, should we strip those out? Is there a reason to leave them there? And the current answer is like, we'll probably strip them out. If you mention to them manually, like we'll go fix it. But we don't automatically strip it out right now just because we haven't developed a thing to do that. And I don't want to go into the whole like AMP description again. There's a link in there to an older thread about how Metafilter uses AMP for some stuff. So if you're curious, I guess go read that. But yeah, it's more of like a how do we handle this sort of crufty aspect. And the current answer is manually go ahead and tell us when you see it. And that's about all.
Yeah, well, and I think that's fine. You know, it's not like it happens that often. Man, it annoys the fuck out of me on my phone, though. So I got to actually go in and do the work to change it. Not with Metafilter, just with the world.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say RIP, Kay Menny passed away at the very end of December 2017. She was a very active and busy Metafilter user.
Yeah, long-time recognizable member of the site.
Yeah. And so I'm sad about that and, you know, posted in the thread because... She was a person I knew.
Yep. I can mention a few quick musics, songs, I guess they're called.
Right. Please do.
There is an excellent cover by DeGosto's band of a couple of pieces of music. Kraid is a mini boss from the classic NES game Metroid. And so there's some Kraid music in there, and then Green Hill, which I'm going to say I think is Sonic music because it sure sounds like Sonic music to my ear, but I was never a Sonic kid. So I'm pretty sure the Green Hill Zone is what that's from, but I can't swear on it. But the Kraid part I know for sure, and the whole thing sounds really good. So good job to DeGosto.
Yes.
I also liked a song by Choco Cat, you will be shocked to hear, called Regime Change, about a change of hall monitors in middle school. And it's a dramatic pop song about this whole situation, and it's really fantastic, and you should go listen to it.
Nice.
But the one other thing I wanted to mention, because I thought it was sort of interesting seeing, like, I always like it when process stuff is happening on Metafilter Music. User Bluebird Wine posted a little over a month ago a recording saying, hey, what do I call this? How do I describe this music I'm making? And got some good conversation out of that.
So here's a song and tell me what this is.
Yeah.
Or help me figure out what this is.
Yeah, and it's got this sort of like insistent sort of not drone exactly, but there's this steadiness to it, you know, that feels very characteristic married to this sort of like bluesy folksy thing. Day before, posted a new recording. Basically came back and worked more on that song. So you've got like these two different versions spanning this conversation, and I think that's super neat.
Aw, that's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good month on Metafilter. I mean, I think every month is a good month, but good. They're all good months in different ways.
Good work Metafiltering, everybody.
Yes. Sorry the podcast is a little bit late, you know, stuff. Yeah,
it happens. But at least it's long, so we've got that going. I think that's about it for me. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No. I just good to talk to you, and happy birthday, and keep on keeping on.
Yeah, likewise. Also happy birthday to you, I guess.
It's in September.
I know, but it's like, you know, it's the thing.
Although
it's like the thing where you're at the gas station and like they're like, hey, you drive safe. You're like, you too. No. Why did I say
that? All the time. Though I did ask an Ask Minifilter question. Sorry, you said anything else?
Oh, sure.
Said,
yeah, no, yeah.
But I asked because I have a milestone birthday coming
up.
Yeah. And I have no ideas about it, and I'm just kind of fucking busy, and every idea seems like it's just going to be, and I was like, you know, can other people give me some ideas? Because I don't really care. I just want to like hang out with my friends, but I'm not sure how to do that because, And so I got some good feedback on some good suggestions.
Yeah, it seems like good
Because Innit Applet had a milestone birthday and did it at a fancy library. And I couldn't go, but I saw the pictures and it looked amazing. And I was like, that's something I would like. How do I do that? And so, ask some questions. It was good.
I think you should do hot dogs, but have everybody bring the fanciest hot dog they can find. It should be like
so. Here's the thing. My sister said, "Did you see this on Twitter?"
No.
She's like, "No hot dogs."
No hot dogs.
Like that's what I usually do. My birthday's right around Labor Day, and I'm like, "Everybody come over for hot dogs and beer." But like, it's kind of a random assortment of people because it's not really a birthday, and it's just hot dogs. And so I was like, "Hot dogs and beer." Kate's like, "You can't have hot dogs for your 50th birthday." And whatever, she doesn't get to pick, but it did. I was kind of like,
You know what you can do is you grill the hot dogs, but you take a knife and you cut it into a long contiguous spiral, and then they grill up like with this
dude,
nice grill.
That is my favorite kind of hot dog.
It's so good.
I always do that.
You could have,
I love it.
You could make it a hot dog carving contest where everybody comes up with their own distinctive pre-grilling slices, and then you guys can all beauty contest the resulting hot dogs.
I asked her if I could have fancy sausages. She said, "Yeah, sure."
Oh, okay. Well, I think you can.
But it's just always weird, right? You're planning your birthday party, and your sister's like, "You can't do that." And you're like, "What?" I mean, I think it was just I caught her at a weird time, you know.
Yeah.
And her point was, "You're better than that," but my point is, I'm not, and I like hot dogs.
I don't want to be, but yeah, it's like out. Let me enjoy my thing. It is the difference in our like sibling relationships that I cannot imagine my sisters having any input whatsoever on what happens on my birthday. But
I'm really good friends with my sister, as you probably like see.
Yeah.
And she and I, in some ways, because we're siblings and we've really grown up together, we've mostly been friends the whole time, have kind of a little bit like, you know, she completes part of me and vice versa. You know, like I help her do certain things that are outside of her wheelhouse. She helps me do certain things that are outside of my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And so helping with this was definitely part of her thing. But I think her whole point is like, I'm not, if I'm involved, there will be no hot dogs. But I have friends with kids, so I think that's kind of going to be the hot dog wedge for us.
Yeah. That kind of makes it easier. Well, hey, good luck with that, and you know.
Thank you. It's in September. I've got plenty of time.
You got some runway left.
Yes.
But yes. All right. Well, I think it's a podcast. I think
that's some good podcast. And like I said, I'm somewhere with real internet, so I'm going to be able to upload this file kind of quick.
Delightful.
Nice. It's good talking to you as always, Josh.
Yeah, you too.
See ya.